Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 173. Our guest this week is a writer and sound designer, the person behind the 32-bit library series of books, which cover entire PlayStation libraries from specific publishers. Also the creator of El Toxico and other comics as well. But we have Darren Hupke. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we'll start with 32-bit library series. You're kind of three deep, but you're kind of four deep. You're on the third volume of that of the 32-bit library series, but you did start with a Sony version before that. But Kickstarter for Volume 3 is live. It's already met its backing goal, but it has 20 days to go. So, you know, walk us through where are we? Where do you feel we're at with the Kickstarter?
Yeah, I mean, the Kickstarter is in a good spot. Like, it was really intimidating to do. I mean, I need to do Kickstarter to do these things. You know, I don't have a day job that's just like flooding the bank with like disposable income and things. So I've used Kickstarter for years. And so having that be an option for me is awesome. But when I did the first 32-bit library book, I think people kind of knew a little bit of me because the Sony book I did before that it kind of evolved from. And so having backers who came back to it and like, you know, head back that previous project, that was like kind of like rewarding and confidence boosting, because it's like, oh, they didn't think that was total garbage and a waste of money. Like, these people are willing to give me more money. Like, this is a good feeling. And so I really tried my hardest with that first volume, the Capcom focused volume, and it went really well. Delivered it on time. There was like just a few minor hiccups throughout the way, but I had properly kind of like logistically planned it out and gave myself like, you know, buffer and space and time. So delivering that all fully and having that done really motivated me. And I was already working and finishing up the second volume, the Namco volume, before I even had shipped out the first volume to backers. So I was throwing in like just printed from my home printer little like flyers with a QR code saying like, hey, reminder, you know, be notified at launch for this volume of the Kickstarter here, just because I was so far ahead of the game. But then again, when I launched that one, same thing, like the first two or three days, I think it was two or three days, and that was funded as well. And just having like the returning backers and people who were on board from the previous one coming back to it and saying like nice things about it, it just, yeah, I think that just kind of gives me like a good positive. This one, when I hit that launch button, I had like, I don't know, I think it said like 34 people were like notified before launch type of thing. But as soon as I hit the launch button, it was almost 24 hours that it was less than, you know, $1,000 away from being fully funded. And that second day, it just passed that goal, no problem. So it's awesome. No stress. It's just like the dreaded waiting time and waiting period for like the creative process. Like, I can't make this part happen faster, but I want to do more, and I want to like kind of keep grinding away and doing things.
Yeah, as you said, you've done Capcom and Namco already, and this one, this third volume, is Konami. But you also you mentioned there, and I wanted to ask about, you do have quite a pace going, like, yeah. Kickstarter wise, like, this has all basically been like a year. And
yeah,
it's three books.
Yeah. And I would definitely would like, I could do more. And I just felt like obligated to ship the current, whatever, what I'm working on. Like, I had the launch and landing page ready for this Konami volume a month ago, but I hadn't yet gotten the printed copies from the printers for the volume two. So I was like, well, I'm not going to like ask people for more money if I haven't given them what they've already given me money for before. You know, it's just, it's a weird mental thing. Like, I'm sure at this point people probably trust or like know that, you know, I know what I'm doing on that end of things. And so they probably would be okay with it. But I'm giving myself like this like forced, like, wait for this to finish before starting this. And not that I feel like I'd be overwhelmed, but it's just a mental thing. But I think I might, if all goes according to plan here, like my volume four, like I'm really excited about. So I might have that launched a little bit sooner just to make sure that I get that out like before the summer of next year. But yeah, the pacing, it's, you know, it's like, if anybody, you know, does like creative things or fulfilling things like that, like when you have like good momentum or you make progress, it's almost like you're not losing energy. You're giving yourself more excitement and creative energy to keep going. So there's like days I just come home from work and I just like, you know, grind out writing, you know, like 5 or 10, you know, write-ups for these games, or I'll like go through and play like, hey, I'm going to play like two or three of like the, you know, lighter games in this, you know, and capture as many screenshots as they can, or like just kind of keep staying constant at grinding through playing the games. But yeah, I'm super, you know, into video games and retro games and things like that. So it's not difficult for me to just sit down and play games and write about them. So like, yeah, the pace is it could be faster even. It seems fast as it is, but it could be faster.
Are you still the only person pulling all the screenshots?
Yeah. Yeah. My initial plan, like when I had the idea for the book, for the Sony volume, like it was just Sony's PlayStation was that book. It was all visuals, no write-ups, no anything like that at all. I was originally just going to put that together with the power of Google and just download screenshots. But you can't find the same screenshots for a game like Tale of the Sun or like those obscure like Art Deep games that were on PS1 like you can for like, you know, Ape Escape or Final Fantasy VII. Like there's just way more of one than the other. And then resolution and quality control, some have like watermarks and, you know, are stretched and obscured. Like it was just like a necessity to have to go through and play through the games just to make sure it was consistent. So yeah, I still have been doing that, and I've been a pretty good workflow with doing that, to just play through and capture all myself. And I feel proud to do that because, I mean, for one, it's entertaining, like, you know, going back and replaying these games, they're fun games. But two, it just makes that like controllable consistency. Like I know they're all going to have that equal like color profile and equal resolution, and they'll scale the same way. So it'll just make the printed book look, you know, well, like, you know, more put together, better put together.
What is the longest you've spent playing a game, like looking for that perfect screenshot?
Yeah, I mean, like this Konami volume, you know, playing through Metal Gear Solid, like I feel like I know the walkthrough of that game, like in the back of my head. Like I've played that so many times already just as a fan of the game. So like I just specifically wanted to capture, like, you know, just want to get to Psycho Mantis and wanted to have a Suikoden save file on it, because, or Castlevania save file on the memory card, so he reads that and says that line, I can capture that screenshot. And so I played through that you know, a couple of times, and I probably had more than enough screenshots. You know, most of the games have like, you know, 12 to 18 screenshots. Some of the bigger games have a little bit more, so you know, you don't really need that many. But you know, after an hour and a half of like playing Metal Gear in one sitting and then coming back to like continue to play it, it was like I'm putting more than enough time into this at this point that it's kind of unnecessary. But there's some games that have surprised me. One Piece Mansion as a Capcom game. As a kid, I mean, I always thought it had something to do with like that anime series and everything. Like I just assumed it was about like One Piece, and it's like this, cool, it's like a Shonen Jump thing. It's just, you know, not my thing. I've never really seen it or read it, so no big deal. I won't ever try that. But when I played it for the book to capture it, it has nothing to do with that. You know, not that it's a bad series or anything, but it has nothing to do with that. And it's like a almost like a resource management game. You build like an apartment complex, and you have like different floors where you can build like apartments for people to move into, and the people have like a little indicator like with green and red arrows where they'll positively like lower stress levels or negatively impact stress levels of people around them. So you're assigning apartments to people all in this building and making sure you're managing how much or little they're being influenced, good or bad, from those around them. And it was just this like fast paced, like resource management type game that I completely was not expecting at all. But definitely I got past the point of like capturing enough screenshots that I was just playing the game. And I'm like, all right, I'm pausing making the book right now. I'm just going to enjoy this game right now because this is just a fun game. And I was like completely surprised by that. So I sunk a lot of time just for fun into that game.
Has there been any game, I know this isn't a PlayStation game, but I'm thinking like Battletoads, for example, where like notoriously people can't get past the turbo tunnel. And is there any game where you're like, I'd really love a screenshot later in the game, but I am just not capable of getting there?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've been trying to just grind it out. Like, I think I'm a pretty good person at video games. I mean, I'm not the best or anything like that at all, but like I think I have a pretty good skill level and skill ceiling. But I'm using an emulator to play through these, so I do abuse like save states, you know. So like playing through Castlevania, like when I enter a screen, you know, or enter a room for the first time, I'll like save a save state there. If I'm playing sloppy or I have like half health before I get through it, I'm like, okay, let me just go back. Let me make sure I'm safe enough to get, you know, further into the game and, you know, not botch this and only have screenshots from level one and like pretend as if like, oh, massive coverage on this game, but I have like 5 minutes of gameplay because I couldn't get any further. So yeah, I've just kind of used like save states to make sure that even if I'm not that good, I'll just kind of like piecemeal it along, like every minute, make a new fresh point so that I can kind of build on that, just to stay as deep in the games as I can.
One of your stretch goals for this one is I know as you said, you generally like you've made the book for the most part before the Kickstarter gets going. And then it's a matter of can we fund the, you know, publishing, the printing, all that stuff. But one of the stretch goals here is you will add 8 more pages to the book, which like do you have to just like make up content for that, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I've been using Adobe like InDesign for it and everything, so like I've made some pretty cool like page templates already, so it's more of just like playing with Legos. Like I can drop in a double page spread and have 8 more screenshots for this game, so that's just an excuse to go back in and play another one of the bigger games. Like maybe I'll dive into Azure Dreams more and capture more, like, you know, of the obscure monsters at higher levels of the tower or something like that. It's just, you know, an easy thing to fulfill. I mean, honestly, because like the layout work, that prep work and all that stuff that goes into that, like that's the long process stuff. But like adding like some pages or adding screenshots, that's just easy and fun to do. So, I mean, it sounds like I'm making myself more work, but I'm just making more of the entertaining part of the work. So there's no harm in doing that whatsoever.
So as we said, the point of this series is not just, you know, to have these screenshots from these various games, but it covers the entire PlayStation library of these publishers. And then I look at the name of your part, or I look at an old podcast of yours, Complete Discography, and it certainly seems like you really like examining like the whole of something.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that too, and I don't know what personality trait of mine it is that that likes that I need from A to Z. Yeah, that Complete Discography podcast, I do that off and on with a friend still. We just do it at our own pace, which is like 6 episodes in 2 years, and that's okay for us. But yeah, like just looking at the entire catalog of a band, going by album, and just kind of seeing the differences. And I think that's visually what I liked about putting it together in chronological order. Like the Namco book, you see Air Combat is the very first game, but then by the end of it, you're seeing like Ace Combat 3, and it's the same hardware, it's the same technology. Like they didn't do anything in between there. It's the same storage size as far as like a CD can hold, like as far as data goes, but the games look, you know, generationally like separate. Like Ace Combat 3 is a visually fantastic game, but it's literally the same technology as running Air Combat. So seeing how it like evolves over the pages, like if you flip through it from page one and go all the way to like the 250th page, you see the developer like gain skill or talent or find like ways to like cut corners and get more out of the technology. So I think it's just an interesting idea, like regardless of even like what the games are and like, you know, what the fun of the title was, but just from the developer or technological standpoint, seeing how that evolves, it's just kind of cool to like the gradient of it all. But yeah, I guess I'm a big catalog guy. I'm a huge comic book nerd and everything. And I have a large collection of like hardcover, like graphic novels and stuff. And my wife and I, when we moved into our home, we bought a few years ago, I built this custom bookshelf, and it's specifically like alphabetized, and I have it like all sorted, like, you know, in my way. And just it's I guess I'm just that type of personality who likes like this, likes the details, likes the, you know, from 1 to 100, and likes to have everything in between and just not piecemeal things.
Well, what if we put that towards you and your work? Like, are you able to look at what you did in the Sony's PlayStation book and now on volume 3 and going into volume 4? Like, do you believe there's been a progression? What have you learned over the time, and like how have you changed how the books are done?
Oh yeah, I think just like the writing and the confidence in the writing, like having more of like, you know, not being afraid to have a little bit of personality or like opinion come through. Like I didn't want it to read as like a like a prescription or like a review of the games. I wanted the games to just be covered from like a retrospective or like nostalgic view of like, hey, this is like, even if this is a garbage game, even if I'm talking about International Superstar Soccer 99, you know, like people don't necessarily care about that per se today, but you know, in the era, like what, like the competition that, you know, drove it to, you know, introduce new AI or you know, things like it was just neat to try and like look at that lens there. And so I think as I've done more books, I'm more like inspired or driven to like lean into that and not be nervous that that's going to be like boring or not what people want. I think I'm doing these books because like I want this book on my shelf and nobody else has made it for me. So at the end of the day, as long as I'm pleased, I think like that then almost has the opposite effect. And even though I'm not thinking about others, it makes others like it even more, because I think that I'm setting a bar for myself, or I'm setting like a quality standard for myself that is positively like making these like better each one. And I think just through doing it and the repetition of it all, like I was comparing and showing somebody at there's a game on a video game expo that was out here, and I had a table at that. That was like the second time I've ever had a table at a convention. I was selling the books, which was super cool to do. But I was showing somebody side by side the Capcom volume and the Namco volume, and like on the page I have like captions for some of the screenshots, and there's just a lot of like dead space on the Capcom pages, and I filled that with the Namco pages by like creatively like staggering the screenshots in a different way. And I felt like I just found ways to use the page more, not necessarily like add more screenshots, but like the way that they were, it was more visually appealing. And again, the Konami volume, like I kind of tweaked my layout and design aesthetic of like how the pages will look, so that you're just, I don't know, I feel like you're getting more bang for your buck on the page. Like there's longer captions that are more squared away and like line up perfectly as from like alignment standpoint with the next photo. And it just utilizes all the pages. So I've definitely seen myself get a lot better through, you know, project one all the way to, you know, where I'm at now with them for sure. I've been converting the books because the size of them actually as well, they're like this A4 paper size, which is kind of like a, have you ever read a Retro Gamer magazine? It's really great. I used to buy them from like Barnes and Nobles and stuff like that, because it was like an import magazine for me here in the US. But they're like really big, like size magazines. And they would do these double page spreads sometimes that had just a one large screenshot with like a caption on it and stuff. And so that's kind of what inspired me to have like every game has a page like that for them. But I like that giant size. So these are like big hardcover books and like oversized slipcase, and it's just like logistically I maybe would have warned myself not to do that from the beginning, because like shipping them and like, you know, figuring that out is kind of a pain. But I've found my groove and I've figured that out and everything. But I've been converting the books now into a 6x9 like paperback size, which is like the average paperback book size you'd go to find at a bookstore. And so I just finished converting the Capcom book to that format and that size. And I feel like, oh man, I almost think this supersedes the big oversized hardcover version from like a quality standpoint. Cause like I'm using the pages better and I'm using the land, like the layouts and the design stuff I've kind of picked up to maximize the real estate that I have. And it's really cool. So I just emailed that out to all the backers who backed the Kickstarter. I just sent them that free updated version of the original one, as well as that 6x9 size one, just because they helped me make the book. I just felt like it was the right thing to do to reward them with this kind of modified version with some slightly different screenshots, and edited the write-ups and everything as well to take more advantage of the space that I had.
Yeah, and those are your, from going forward, those are print on demand, those paperback ones, right?
Yeah, I just ordered a proof from Amazon, and so if I like the way that is, like, then it's full steam ahead, and I'll have all of these converted to that print-on-demand Amazon format that'll, like, let people just, you know, in an evergreen way, be able to buy them online, which helps me.
Sorry. Is it not a coffee table book if it's paperback, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the big Kickstarter books, those are 100% like really awesome coffee table books. If it's a paperback, it's more, yeah, I don't know. What's the, less exciting sounding version of a coffee table book. I mean, it's still a book that I would like you to have in your home and on your shelf, but just not on your coffee table, just on your desk next to your computer, or on your passenger seat while you're, you know, on your lunch break at work.
Right. Not while you're driving.
Yes.
Would you say you are more well known for this book series, for your comics, or for the tweet you made about Gary Payton throwing up in his mouth?
Yeah, that was my fame right there. Man, that was awesome how that thing blew up. That's 100%. I am the Bleacher Report guy who caught Gary Payton throwing up in his mouth. Like, that is what I'm most famous for sure. Yeah, I know. I mean, honestly, I think I'm still just an unknown dude. I mean, I'm just, you know, trying to have some fun and you know, using the internet to help broadcast the creative things I'm doing. So I feel like they all kind of snowball into each other and people kind of know me from meeting me various places. I used to run and manage a comic shop in Southern California. And so my comic interest, I like met a lot of comic professionals and booked and helped set up like a lot of signings and stuff like that. So I got to meet a lot of great people that way. And so I think I'm definitely more of like a comic book guy to a lot of people. So I think this retro gaming stuff is feels like new-ish to me, but I've been meeting a lot of like great people by doing this, that like this is definitely like the path I want to lean into for the foreseeable future. Like it's like really great people and just, you know, in a really awesome kind of like community mindset. Like I've met a lot of content I watch like on YouTube. Like I've been a huge fan of like Digital Foundry and DF Retro specifically, and the guy who does that, John Linneman. I just had the Michael Scott mindset of, you know, you miss 100% of shots you don't take, and, you know, taking Wayne Gretzky's quote for myself. I was like, you know, I like this guy. I like this guy's retro gaming content. I've watched him for years. I'm just going to send him a message and see if he wants to help me out with the book. And he replied, he sent me an email back and he said, for sure, like he would absolutely do it. And so we came to an agreement. He wrote up a couple entries for two of the games and submitted and gave me this really cool article in the first book on like the home conversion process for Capcom games. And he's a big deal. Like, I mean, Digital Foundry's got like, you know, like oodles of subscribers, and they have like tons of great content. They put it all the time. And he's just a guy who's helping me with my books. And I'm super thankful for him. And now I've met a few other people in the same way. The guy, Jason Dvorak, who runs his own website called GameRave.com. He's this huge PlayStation collector. I mean, he's actually got massive collections for other systems, but he has literally every US PS1 game and all the variants, all the bundles, you know, everything. And he's this wealth of knowledge and just a positive guy. He's helped me by submitting some like bonus entries that we've done from like stretch goals and stuff. Now Kurt Collada, who's runs like Hardcore Gaming 101, and he's done and written a bunch of books himself too. Like, he's a fantastic dude. I just emailed him just blindly asking him if he'd like to help me out, and he's sent me, you know, two articles so far, and has been super positive to participate with all this as well, and his stuff's great. So yeah, I mean, it's been just a cool thing to just dive into this world and start to meet these people, and hopefully, you know, one day myself, you know, I'll be able to help others, you know, doing their own creative things with it as well, as far as the retro gaming world goes, and not just be the comic book guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, anyone kind of trying to get into this sort of scene, I think can take away from that, you know, just put it out there, email people, talk to people, see what happens. But as far as that viral tweet, I mean, you're obviously largely, not entirely, but largely a one-man show, and you got to market. Is there any, like, when you know, people always say, I want to go viral and whatnot, like, can you parlay that totally unrelated viral tweet to marketing for these books? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you can't. Literally, as soon as it started blowing up, my best friend was like, he texted me, he was like, yo, promote your book. Like, and I was like, oh yeah. So I added on to that tweet, and I was like, oh, hey, you can buy my book. Digital copies are available at this link for $10. It was literally like the follow-up tweet that everyone who saw the original would have to see it. But like, you can see like the analytics and the impressions and even like the likes and retweets, just the video and just the ridiculous like sight of Gary Payton throwing up in his mouth. Was the only thing people were interested in. I had like three likes. Not a single sale of the book happened in like the week after. Like there was nothing that came from me trying to like leverage that on there at all whatsoever. It was cool just to have people like see your name. I got like a I had people like coworkers like before I even got into work the next day, they were like on Instagram sending me like reels and all that stuff, saying like well, what the hell, you're famous, and like sending me like clips of it. And I was like yep, I'm famous, but it's netting me no positive gains on anything that I'm doing, you know, like personally, monetarily. It's done nothing. It's just been like a cool instance just to have that, you know, blow up and be seen by a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, and I think I've heard that from various social media people, where it's like telling their boss, you know, the idea isn't really to go viral. The idea is to sell a product. Like,
mm-hmm.
And viral doesn't necessarily equate to that.
Yeah, I would have loved if like suddenly there was just a flood of people able to like buy the digital copies, and it turned into like, oh hey, who's this guy? I like video games. Let's check out this book. And then boom, I'm retiring from my job early and focusing on this full time. Like that would have been the dream, but didn't happen. It's just a funny video, and I don't know why I was the first person to notice it. What was crazy about that? I mean, just to get into basketball for a second, it happened, and I was like eating dinner, and like me and my daughter were watching the game. And like it happened, and then I realized that when he wasn't in the game any longer, it was like 2 or 3 minutes later, he wasn't in the game and he wasn't even on the sidelines. And I was like, oh, where the hell did he go? I was like, I remember him like awkwardly walking up the court, and I like caught that in my eye. And so when there was a commercial, I just rewound, like, you know, it was YouTube TV, so I was able just to go back in time and looked at it, and that's when I saw it. So like I thought for sure, like, hey, this was 10, 15 minutes ago. Like, you know, this has got to be on Twitter already. And I looked, and people were like speculating like something else. And like, I'm like, no, wait, he literally, like, I see his cheeks puff up. Like this guy's threw up in his mouth standing on the basketball court. So I like narrated over like what I was seeing that I was surprised no one else had pointed out yet. And that's like in the video, that's what I'm doing. I'm talking. And my daughter even like chimes in something. I think she's like, yeah, I see it. And so I just thought that was more entertaining, the fact that like my narration of it, not just the video of it, but like me as a human being was like captured in that for that video.
It's like a reaction video.
yeah. Super random scenario. I've never seen that. I mean, I've seen odd things happen in sports and everything, but the guy just like puking and fully retaining it in his mouth before having to leave the court. Like it's a skill on its own.
You mentioned meeting so many people in the comics world. You had a tattoo designed by Ben Templesmith. What was it, and how many famous artists have designed tattoos for you?
Oh yeah, no, he's the only one, and I actually haven't permanently gotten that on me yet. It's just like life happened in, and I mean, now I have kids and everything, and so like there's literally less of a priority to go and do that. But that was he was the most famous person to do something like that. Like he for sure, like we were hanging out after a signing, like, and it was like a big launch event for a book that they had done, him and a couple of his partners, and so it was just cool to have him in the comic shop and hanging out. And we drew that, and it was actually a customer gave us the idea. He was like, oh, you should draw something on Darren, and he can get it tattooed. And I was like, you know, like, well, this costs money. Like, I don't know why you're throwing this idea out there on my body, and it's not even something I'm necessarily like agreeing to yet. But it came out really cool. I took a bunch of like high quality photos of it, and it's actually that little like skull and squid like imagery, and like he uses that for his own like branding personally. So it's already like a big Templesmith thing. So even if something, the worst case scenario was to happen, I like, you know, don't have those photos anymore, I can still find his like that style of artwork of his that he uses all of his merchandise to this point anyway. But I definitely plan to do it. I keep seeing a spot on my arm, like it's still open. There's still plenty of negative space there, and it would slot in there nicely. But yeah, only one other time had I tried to actually do that. It was what game came out? I think it was Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence, the re-release of Metal Gear Solid 3. Kojima was at like the Universal City Walk signing at a game store down there. I don't remember. I think it was technically a GameStop, maybe an EB Games. But he did like some US signing just randomly for it. And I showed up and stood in line for like 4 or 5 hours, and I have a Solid Snake tattoo, and actually I have a Raiden tattoo as well. But I was gonna see if he would like sign over it, and I was gonna get his signature of you know, over the tattoo, like tattooed permanently onto me and everything. But you were like under no circumstances able to like directly interact or touch him. And like, you were stationed off in a line until it was absolutely your turn, where you handed two items to him on a table, he signed them, and then you like, you know, took them back, and there was like no chance for like really like dialogue or discussion or anything like that whatsoever. It was kind of awkward. But it was still kind of cool to meet the guy, and I mean, as a huge Metal Gear fan, you don't see that happen too often, him just doing like big signing events or media events like that for the public. So it was a cool experience still, regardless if I got his signature tattooed on me or not.
Can you tell us, do you remember the haiku you wrote that won the Devolver Digital Writing Contest, and you were sent the Ammonomicon from Enter the Gungeon?
Yeah, that was super cool too. I can probably pull it up.
I mean, it had to be a pretty good, because if this is a writing contest, like a haiku is so condensed, it had to be pretty good to win a full writing contest.
Yeah, no, why can I not find it? It's on their Discord. I feel like if I go into like their archive channel or something, that it could be found. Yeah, and I'm not seeing it now. I literally just posted it straight to their Discord. I didn't write it in advance or anything. I saw the contest was going, and I'm not saying this to like brag or boast or anything, but like it was literally just on the spot. Like I saw it was there, and I was like, well, I'm gonna just shoot my shot and I'll try it. And so I just came up with it on the spot. And I will have to find it, and I'll send it to you over Discord. You can maybe share it out later or something like that. But
sure.
Oh, man, where is it? I wish I could have found it. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, they sent me the Ammonomicon, and like I've told my wife, like I've looked it up a few times on eBay, and you know, it's like $300-$400, and I can't justify spending that on one game, you know. But I loved Enter the Gungeon, and I had the special reserve games, like limited print run of it and all that stuff, like just had the standard edition, and I really wanted that book because it was like an in-game item but just made in the real world, and I thought it was just kind of cool. And I got the copy, and then this might upset people, but as soon as it arrived, I told my wife, I was like, hey, I don't plan on reselling this, like you're okay with me like opening this, right? And she's like, I don't care, it's yours, do whatever you want to do with it. And so I broke the seal, ripped open the plastic, and absolutely like dug into and actually looked through the book and everything like you're supposed to. I know a lot of people may have probably just kept it sealed, sat it on a shelf, or tried to flip it for more money later or something like that, but I wanted it just because it was like, I loved that game, and I missed my chance to get that when it first was released. So I'm glad I was able to get it after all.
I got a couple more random questions here. Can you describe the thrill of, we're obviously both 90s kids, because can you describe the thrill of having your letter read out on Beakman's World when you were a kid?
Yeah, you did your research there. It's the power of social media. It was super cool. And so, huge fan of the show, like, you know, Bill Nye, Beakman's World, all that stuff. Those were always great shows as kids. And my brother and I would watch it all the time. We sent that letter in. I remember writing it in like a spiral. So it was like confusing. Do you have to like twist it around and almost give yourself a headache? But it was a question about why you got ice cream headaches. But, you know, my brother and I wrote it in. We sent it in. We continued to watch the show. And we never saw it happen. It wasn't until like one day at school. Some kids were like, oh man, they read your letter on Beakman's World, and we were like blown away. But this was, you know, the mid-90s, like there was no way to like re-watch that specific broadcast or anything, and so we would continuously try and like watch the show to see if it would be rerun, and I never saw it. And I mean, just a few months back, I was just some late night YouTube like hole, and I found myself just like, oh, you know what, let me search for this. And then I was like searching for like, you know, like an IMDb style, like something that like wrote up what the episodes were about, and just trying to see like, you know, ice cream headache, Beakman's World. And then there was like, oh yeah, episode 8, season this, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I found a clip of it, and there it was, you know, the whole time it was there. And the power of the internet, I was able to have it be resurfaced. But that was super cool. I mean, I wish I would have been able to see it live as a kid to have been like blown away in that regard. But you know, knowing that friends and kids in our school like saw it and confirmed it, that was always just kind of a neat thing, a neat little anecdote for our lives.
Yeah, you've been going viral your whole life.
Yeah, apparently, I guess, actually, yeah.
And how is your, I'm a big Super Nintendo fan, how is your garage sale SNES doing? Have you managed to clean it up?
Yeah, no, that that's bad news. There's no happy ending there. The case did not de-yellow in any way whatsoever. It retained its color, and then that peroxide solution that like I had kind of made up and followed all the instructions to a T on ended up kind of like leaking out of the bag and kind of making a mess. And ultimately the shell I couldn't even clean off very well. So I ended up having the shell that was just kind of ruined. And so I actually just had to throw that away, but I still had like the internal, like the guts, like still available. And then after about a month of realizing I have no idea or plan or something I can do to kind of like correct that problem, I ended up recycling that as well. So that is one less Super Nintendo on the planet, because I apparently misread some key instruction along the way to de-yellow that thing. So it's not easy to do. If you've done it, you know, props to you for seeing that project through, but I failed at that. I was unable to do that.
I have not. My Super Nintendo is very much on its last legs. I have to put in a credit card because the way the pin connector is like kind of warped. I have to put a credit card in with the game to get it to like work.
Nice. Yikes. Yeah, there were some folks at that Game On Expo I was at who were selling like case mods and like acrylic and clear cases for them. And like I instantly thought like, man, I wish I would have, you know, kept those guts, because I easily just could have bought like a case like that and kind of like self-fixed it, or, you know, made an LED lit up, you know, fancy Super Nintendo. But it's available for those of you who want to do things like that. Don't throw them away. Don't scrap them. Still good.
Well, let's end back on Volume 3. Kickstarter is still live. You know, sell us on it if we haven't already. Tell us what people need to know about Volume 3 of the 32-bit library series.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same focus as all the other volumes so far. The intent is to, like you mentioned, like publisher by publisher. So this is all of Konami's games. There's 50 games that they did. Like I mentioned before, having some extra support. There's going to be some coverage of the PlayStation port of Snatcher and Police Knots, like the import copies of that by Kurt Collada. So there'll be actually more than just the 50 US games. There'll be additional games in there. But it's all laid out chronologically. Every game gets an equal amount of coverage in order to just like have like tangible like facts and just fun retrospective like details to kind of read about, you know, not just like a generic review or like hot takes or like I talk trash on some garbage sports game or something like that. You know, I just try and ensure that the games are getting like fun details or fun anecdotes or even like developer details of like, you know, some key team members who went on to work on other games that might be more popular and things like that, just to be able to have there. So you're not just getting 40 pages of some Metal Gear Solid coverage that you've probably already heard and read about and know all the ins and outs of. Metal Gear is covered and you get to review and recap that, but you also get to see some kind of more underlooked Konami games, things like Azure Dreams, which I was a huge fan of for like an RPG and random battle fan. Other games in there like the PlayStation Contras that, you know, weren't as exciting as the previous ones in the series, but you also don't see them talked about very much because they poorly made the transition to 3D on paper, but there were still some cool details and some cool gameplay mechanics that they did in those games. So yeah, the book is there for fans of PlayStation games, just the PlayStation era, being able to look through chronologically and see how these games evolved and have a just total absolute coverage of everything they did publisher by publisher. So ultimately you'll have a few volumes if you follow along all the way to see some of like the best and biggest publishers and all of their creative outputs there. So yeah, I mean, I have a good time doing it. Like I said, I do it because I want this book on my shelf. There's many great retro gaming books and they typically cover like NES and SNES titles. So not as many folks in the PlayStation. So that's where I felt like I could just slot myself in there nicely. And it's been super fun to do. And you know, hopefully other people who decide to give it a try find something they enjoy with it too.
And people can find it searching 32-bit library volume 3 Konami's PlayStation on Kickstarter. You've also got a website, sort of a CV website, darrenhupke.carbonmade.com. That's darrenhupke. Darren Hupke, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this is awesome to do. I appreciate being on the podcast. And you've got a new listener in me, so I'll listening out weekly and looking out for new episodes.